It's Tuesday, the 1st of December 2015, and I'm still in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia. Today I go to the female campus to meet the faculty and to give them a lecture on writing for publication in the afternoon, and before that I meet the teachers and teaching assistants and lecturers. I've been allocated 3 hours for both of these sessions. They certainly won't take that. I really hope I can get some time in an office to do my own work, because that's beginning to pile up a bit. So we'll see what the day's got in store. It's going to be strange being a man on the female campus. I don't know if, I'm guessing there are other men around, but well, we'll see. I don't know. You'll hear later.
If we've time, we can talk about that. If not, I'll have to do that some other time. I'm coming back in May, I hope, so there might be another chance. Okay, so don't try and cram everything into today. Please, I can't really see you because I'm a bit dazzled here, but just feel free to ask questions as I'm going through this. I'll leave plenty of time, but don't hesitate to ask if you don't understand anything. Don't be shy. Okay, that's what you're expecting? Good. If you haven't met me already, I'm Roger Watson. Roger, University of Hull is where I work. I'm Editor-in-Chief of the Journal of Advanced Nursing, which is I'll tell you a bit about. And I'm also editor of the Nursing Open Journal, which is a new pay-to-publish open access journal. I must emphasise, I'm not here to advertise the Journal of Advanced Nursing, okay? But I will use it as an example of the journal I know best to sort of describe what I'm trying to get across. But I'm not here to advertise it. I'm not here to say you must publish in this journal. We don't have space for all the papers anyway. I just want to try and help you generally to get published in a good impact factor journals. Or it gets rejected. The top reason for rejection at this point is not reading the guidance for the journal. I can look at a paper, I can tell in 2 seconds whether somebody's followed the guidance or not. Next, it's checked by my team at the office, the editorial assistant and the managing editor. We check them all for similarity to other sources. If it's too similar to other sources, it will be rejected at that point. We also check for the length of the paper, the use of English, the organisation of the paper, other aspects of the guidance. And again, if it's not done properly, my managing editor will just reject the paper. What I'm trying to say is we try not to waste our time working on papers that are not going to make it through to the end. We try not to waste your time by having to wait for 6 months or whatever to get an answer. You get an answer very quickly, sort of within a day, within a couple of days. If the paper's okay, it goes into an editor. The editor has reviewers reviewing the paper. The reviewers send the reviews back to the editor. The editor makes a decision based on the reviews. And of course, sadly, at this point, the paper can be rejected as well on the basis of the reviews and the editorial decision. But if it's not rejected, you will most likely be asked to revise the paper characteristics to them. Then there'll be some editorial decision and input. And at this stage, if the paper is rejected or you're asked for revisions, you will be given the reasons, and you'll be told specifically what to do to make your paper better. That's what I know, but that was my way of saying no. I don't know how to answer your question, but those are some of the things I would advise you to do. Okay. I've turned this off by mistake. This is just I hope you can see this at the back there, but this is just a list of the things that we publish. Just to show you there's more than one way to get into a journal. Some of these things may not count towards your CVs or your promotions or whatever, but there's lots of ways to get published. We publish editorials. I've never had an editorial yet from Saudi. That would be a good thing to do, an editorial on Saudi nursing. We publish review papers and research papers. We publish original papers. By original, I don't mean original, it has to be something somebody else hasn't done. This is research that you do hands-on by yourself. That's the meaning of original. We publish research methodology, and this is divided into instrument development, questionnaire development, and research protocols. We don't publish translations of instruments anymore. They just don't get cited. So I'm sorry, we don't publish them. And we published pilot studies, short 1,000-word abstract papers. We published discussion papers, which are, how can I put it, they're a bit like editorials, except they're bigger. They're kind of opinion pieces, but they're opinion pieces backed up by a substantial body of literature. Concept analysis, which is a very American thing. Those of you who've done or doing PhDs in America will have done a concept analysis as part of your PhD. Taking an issue, like I mentioned the violence against women earlier, you know, somebody might say, okay, I'm going to research violence against women, but what exactly does it mean? What is the concept? Where does it end? Where does it begin? Does this count? Does that count? And there are formal ways of doing that. And we publish lots of these, and they tend to get quite highly cited. We would like to publish consensus guidelines, but we clinical guidelines, we don't get many of them. I've had one so far on pressure sores. We don't get many of these. I'd like them because they're very highly cited. And we publish correspondence, but the correspondence doesn't go into the journal. It goes into our online blog, so it doesn't count as actual publication. Do check the aims and scope of a journal. It tells you the mission of the journal, what the journal is setting out to do, what it publishes, who's expected to write for the journal, the nature of the articles published, and who's the intended readership. And that might partly address your question. It's to really, you know, look at the aims and scope and make sure that what you're thinking of doing falls within them. It's not a guarantee, but at least it helps. And I do get papers sometimes. That's our aim and the scope, some papers that lie outside it. We don't do animal experiments. We don't do drug trials, that kind of thing. You know, so that's outside the scope of my journal. A little bit. So you do need to get that sort of mentality of actually forcing yourself now and again to do it. And that's once you've done that, the rest should follow. Learn to write anywhere, okay? Don't wait until you're in your office, because you're never in your office. My favourite place to write is my office at home, overlooking the avenue where I live, with my tea and coffee downstairs on tap and my children going about and the cat walking about. And it's nice, you know? I'm never there. I travel a lot. I do a long-haul flight every month, and I do a short-haul flight as well. I'm never at home. 2 weeks in a month, I'm at home. So I'm never there, so I've got to learn to write in different places.
But this cannot be applied on the scientific writing.
Yes, it can.
Scientific writing need to be in the office and be formal and
right, I'm gonna
alert and focusing.
No, absolutely not. There is no such thing as scientific writing. There's only writing. Okay? Hear me out. Anybody else agree?
I can sit and organize
everything. We've all got these. We've all got iPads, iPhones. I really diametrically disagree with a comment.
Depends on his personality.
But I completely disagree with that one.
Okay.
Depends on his personality.
We can make a change.
Well, depends on your personality. That's another problem you can put in the way. That's a barrier. Okay. I'm not going to ask how many papers you've published. Okay. I'm not going to compare. But I had this argument with a woman in Bahrain, a doctor, who said, I completely disagree. You've got to sit down for hours on end in your office and write. So I went to her head of school and said, as a matter of interest, how many papers has she written? She said, none. She never published any, you know, so I'm sure you have. I'm pulling your leg, as they say in my country. Okay? I'm having an argument with your staff here.
I was there.
So I didn't see. You've got to learn to write your office, home, trains, but sitting in the back of a plane, that's what I do, writing. And I've written 400 odd scientific papers. I can't think of any of them that were written in my office, so there you go. I'll come back to that in a minute. So I create a file so I don't have this. I've got boxes into which I can drop my ideas. The biggest inspiration you need is drawing the chair up to the writing table. That's the inspiration you need. Try not to write like this. I'm waiting for an hour. Okay, this is the wrong way to write. Don't sit surrounded by all the papers that you've read, because all you're going to do is read those papers and get blocked. That's a real picture from a colleague of mine from Hull University, a Thai colleague with whom I'm writing a paper. This is her Facebook picture on the day she was trying to write the paper. And she didn't. You can see she's got long hair, so she's got a thing to pin her hair back. She's got her iPhone, she's got biscuits, she's got, you know, she's got everything she needs to... for comfort. She's got every paper that she's read, she's got a draft, she's got them all highlighted, like this. I used to write like this. The problem is that what you then become determined to do is to bang every one of those papers into your article, and it completely blocks you, because you get one idea, you write a bit, and then you keep looking for a paper. The best thing to do is just forget about all that and write what it is you want to write. Okay? Edit it and sort the science out later. The science being, is this point referenceable? Is it not? Is it original? Does it need to come out? You know, sort it out later. This way you'll find you'll have written, you know, in no time at all. You'll write your 500 words. Immediately, you don't have to learn again. Not a very good analogy, but you know what I mean. The other thing I do is by setting out the paper with the headings and subheadings, I don't start at the beginning. I start usually with the design and then the results, then start to build up the other bits around it. So don't think that you've got to write the paper from beginning to end. Don't think that while you're writing the introduction, you can't write something in the discussion. If you've got an idea for the discussion, jump to it. Count the words, stop after the 500 words. So, good targets, stick to them, give yourself rewards afterwards. The people who succeed are those who treat it like a job. You know, we don't say, when we give a teaching session, we don't teach from 9 o'clock in the morning till 7 o'clock at night. You know, we have a specified time. When we run a clinic, we don't do it, you know, all day. We do it till the patients are finished. You know, we've got a limit. When we write, we shouldn't be writing forever. We should say, right, I'm going to write this much, or I'm going to write for half an hour, and then I'm going to stop. So, treat it like a job. Treat it as part of what you do. Third rule, seeking criticism. Okay? To be a great writer, get a great critic. All good writers will have somebody to look over their writing. Find a critical friend. This sort of person's no good. I'm sure you've got these sort of people around. Don't go to destructive people. People who will always say, that's rubbish. You know, that, they're no good, because they're just no good. Any more questions?
Thank you.
You can email.
So busy. So just looking, thinking.
So my inbox tomorrow will be full of papers.
Hope so.
You inspire us now.
Well, I hope so.
To let your inbox full, maybe within 6 months.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you
very much. Thank you. Those were some snippets from my session this afternoon in the female college. So my first day's over, went pretty much according to plan. We had some difficulty with the IT in the afternoon, which set us back a little bit. But the sessions were well attended. I had a consultation session with the teaching assistants and master students in the morning, and then the teaching assistants and the other faculty attended my session in the afternoon. I have to say it's just incredibly difficult. Everybody doesn't just look the same, everybody is exactly the same, because they're all dressed in black. There are one or two that don't hide their faces, but mostly they hide their faces, and you can't tell who's speaking to you without some difficulty. You can't remember who's spoken to you because you don't remember their faces. They're not good. It's a general Arabic trait, I'm afraid. They're not very good at projecting themselves anyway here, men or women. But the women are especially bad at it, and of course they're mumbling through their hijabs. And I don't mind saying that I find the whole thing utterly ridiculous. The vice dean doesn't wear a hijab, and neither did a couple of other people. A young lady that spoke to me at lunchtime didn't. But some of them do, and you really can't tell what they're thinking or anything. It is really difficult. I have to say I found it more difficult today than ever before, when you're speaking to a group of people and you look up to the back of the group and all you see are these eyes peering out at you out of little slits. Anyway, on the positive side, some really firm inquiries about coming to study at Hull, and very positive about the possibility of doing the joint degree course, whereby they study in Saudi and we supervise in the UK. So I've really tried to get things going at Hull on that. We'll see how it goes. Julie, the Dean's very positive about it. And I've been given a couple of manuscripts here to look at. They're not particularly good. I'll have to break that news to them tomorrow. And they really don't seem to be able to read an academic paper and then mimic the style. They just seem to write more or less as they wish, whatever they want, and the layout is always appalling. There's something about the way that things are viewed here. They just don't seem to think it's really that important to follow the guidelines, I think. The dean was making the excuse that it's the ones who have their been educated in American systems that don't follow guidelines, the ones in the British do, not the dean, sorry, the vice dean for the female college, but that simply isn't true. They really don't seem to see things the way we do. Spaces before full stops, spaces before commas, I don't know where this comes from. Formatting's awful. I got one piece today which had single spacing, double spacing, different sizes of fonts. The commas all had spaces before them. They're wedded to the Vancouver referencing system, so there's numbers all over the place. And just looks like a proverbial dog's breakfast. So as a man today, I was kept in the outer limits. There's a sort of peripheral set of rooms, and there's one that the dean uses, which obviously men can go to, but there are big doors further down the corridors beyond which we mustn't go and are not allowed to enter. I'm guessing that at the weekends that there are men in there doing any heavy lifting and any heavy work that needs to be done when the students are away, but again, complete nonsense because I can't be shown the campus, not that I really want to see it, but there's so much here that's just so incredibly different from my own country, and really, I've never been to Kuwait where I think some of this is replicated, but Oman, Qatar, Bahrain, there's none of this really. You've still got the cultural overlay, but not this extreme form of separation of men and women, and nobody can really answer the question as to why it happens, other than that it's political. Anyway, enough from me. I've got dinner tonight with the dean, with Ahmad, and I'm going to meet Mansour Al-Yami, my former PhD student, who's now at the Ministry of Health, in charge of the nursing, I think, and allied health profession training budget, so it'll be very interesting to meet them. So I shall report from that in due course. I'm back from dinner. I knew everybody at the table from the faculty, and also Mansour Al-Yami, my former PhD student who now works at the Ministry of Health here in Riyadh. Really good to see him again. I've forgotten the name of the restaurant already, but as usual the driver didn't quite know where we were going, but we got there eventually, and it was an odd restaurant. Again, I've forgotten the name, but it had a kind of Mexican theme, but the food mainly seemed to be Chinese style. I walked in and I saw bottles of wine behind the counter and my eyes lit up, but when I checked carefully they were 0% alcohol, so we had the usual fairly ghastly sort of soft drinks and fruit drinks with dinner tonight, and I reckon we left about twice as much food as we actually ate. The sheer amounts of food that people expect you to eat here, or at least that are served to you here, are huge, and the concept of waste just doesn't really seem to matter. However, the food was very good, and some new prospects opening up from a recent British visit here by the Department of Health to train nurses from Saudi in the UK at bachelor's and master's level. Apparently the plan is for Saudi to send 10,000 nurses out internationally for advanced academic and clinical training, which is good news for the places that can accommodate this and get themselves organised to take them. It's happening at a time when clinical placements will be even harder to get, with the cap being lifted on training places, but I really hope we can make some effort to accommodate this at Hull. It would be great to see some Saudi students there. So tomorrow I'm back at the Ladies' College for consultations and then to meet the master's students, and that'll be my last night here. One more day to go on Friday, and I'll be heading home, and I'm looking forward to that.